fill in. I'm Aaron Q. I am an alcoholic. By the grace of God, my sobriety date is 12/14/12. So shy of 5 years. And what a blessing this is. Grateful to our pioneers, fathers, and program, and all the amazing teachers for everything you share. And so it's an honor, and it's a privilege to be standing up here today, passing on this beautiful program and way of living. So by the grace of God, this amazing program and all of you, I stand here today to share my experience, strength, and hope. And I'll start off with what I, you know, the usual. So prayer, third step prayer. To God, I offer myself to thee, to bear with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, so that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. I want to say, you know, congratulations to everybody who picked up a chip today. If you are new here and you're a newcomer, you are the most important person here. You really are. And that's how I, when I first came into recovery, how I was treated. I was the most important person here. I was welcomed. I was loved. And I could truly, truly feel the love in this program through all of you. And the love also meant a lot of acceptance, which I'll speak to here in a little bit in terms of what really I was raised in Costa Rica, and actually was born in Costa Rica, and raised by two very loving Al-Anons. And who I now know are my Al-Anons, and ladies with full of love in their heart, and really truly have done and did the best they could. And you know, I say that because you know, as a kid, I come to find today I'm actually a fourth generation that I know of Al-Anon and alcoholic. You know. So, as a kid, I remember always having this nervousness about me, and I knew that things were different, and that, at least for me, in my own experience, you know, Mom raised us, she was very hardworking, there was an absence of a father. But I had stepfathers, and truly, I think my fathers were more my uncles than anything else. Mom worked very hard to raise us, my sister and I, and my grandmother was home, so I'm blessed with two moms, actually. So my grandmother, who's 96 today, must have still have her with us. Wow. Bought me this suit.
Yeah.
To suit up. And she says, if you're going to go up there, I want you to go in style and look good. So, at almost 97 years old, she was telling me yesterday, it's like, Papito, because she called me Papito, it's like, maybe I should get you another suit, so because if you're calling in to come up then. So, anyhow, true love. So, you know, I had a pretty good childhood, other than being a little bit different. I remember I loved to play with dolls when I was a kid. So I knew things were a little bit different from early on. And I was always inside. I didn't want to go outside. My sister was always more of a tomboy than I was. because I was afraid. I was afraid because I was different, you know. And I was different, and I was afraid to be treated differently. And I didn't know how to fit in. You know, life moved on. And I remember my first stepdad was a drinker and abusive. Abused mom physically, and I remember that from early on. And there were arguments between mom and grandma and what might have you, and, but a lot of it had to do with the disease to me. I understand the disease today in terms of grandma providing mom or some feedback and mom being a little bit more liberal. And anyhow, so moving forward, at the age of 12, mom made a decision to come to the U.S. And that was after a flood we had, and which took down pretty much our rental house, and we were just in hardship, and it was just one of those things where she was offered the opportunity, and here we are at 12 years old, almost 13, moved to the States, big change, leaving our family behind, very, very close to my cousins or my brothers and sisters. And so my sister, mom, and I, we just moved here, and in San Antonio, we settled here and started a new life. And my grandma's been back and forth to and from for the last 38 years we've been here. To this day, she doesn't travel on her own, so I have the opportunity to go get my grandma and bring her back to the States. And she's been doing that again for a number of years. So that to me has been a huge symbol of that love. And I remember that, again, having that conflict of not fitting in early childhood. My grandmother also was also very, and is very devoted to her religion. And I was raised in a very strict mindset in terms of beliefs. And a God that to me was more judging, more punishing, and today, thanks to this program, I've come to believe that that is her understanding of a higher power, and I love her, and that's to me, it's her faith, and just as I have that faith and love for a God of my own understanding, who am I to judge her in terms of her belief, and so I understand that now, but it's been a lot of healing through this process and this program. So being different, come to find in the early, you know, teenage, you know, realize I'm gay, right? So and so with that religious belief and just knowing that I am not good enough, I'm an abomination, I guess is what, you know, I've read and I used to think and you know, so I, and again coupled with that nervousness, I had pretty good, you know, teenage, childhood, except when stepdads came into the picture. So my second stepdad came into the picture when I was a sophomore in high school, and mom married this guy, and he moved in, and anyhow, it was just a horrible experience in terms of the physical abuse my mom endured, and the situation was not healthy, and to the point where, I mean, I don't think it's normal for a junior in high school to be having to kick a door down to find my mom being choked by my stepdad. And so those are to me things I share because those are things that through the program I've been able to heal. And I've been able to have a lot of growth and understanding that, you know, there are others that are sick and now come to forgive and love and move forward with life. But I didn't drink till I was about 21 years of age. I actually waited till I was legal. And I remember that the earlier part of the drinking was very sporadic. You know, I would go out and get drunk, but I would go to work, but it was not until later, as time progressed. Oh, and by the way, when I was 22 years old, I met someone at the bar, and that was my partner for 14 years following that. So, you know. It just the drinking and the exposure to other substances. I always had that curiosity, I was like, what are they doing back there in the restroom? I want to go try what they're doing. And sure enough, I started to experiment at an early age, in the mid-20s, with other substances. And that is interesting to now know that being an alcoholic, the disease is a progressive disease, and that I wanted more. And so anyhow, mom finally splits with this, my second stepdad, and there's my current stepdad, and he's also a drinker. And anyhow, so continue moving forward with a lot of pain. A lot of it is I wanted my mom protected. I wanted the very best for my family. I wanted the best for my girls, my mom, grandma, my sister. And so come to find, my family is a true asset. So certainly anything that affects my asset is going to affect me from a resentment perspective. And so I remember that things didn't really get out of control until I was probably in my mid-30s. That's when drinking took on a new meaning in terms of getting fired from jobs. I had this amazing job that I loved for a good 14 years. And I remember being in a very deep depression. I'm going to go back a little bit. In 2000, I had a lot of stress. I was drinking and using heavily. And in addition, I had a not so healthy situation at home and busy at work. And I had a panic attack. And I thought that I was having a stroke. I drove myself to the hospital and come to find that I was having a panic attack. I didn't know what a panic attack was. And I remember then in the ER, the doctor saying, and you're all right, you're not having a stroke, but we're going to give you something to make you feel better, to kind of calm your nerves down. And so that's when I started with my first prescription, my anxiety medication. So I remember seeing a psychologist for a good probably 13 years before I came to recovery, and continued on drinking, using. But see, when I went to see these doctors, I was never honest about my drinking and use. I shared about all the other issues going with my family and my stepdad, my childhood, but I was afraid to get fired from my job because they offer the benefits, and what if they talk to each other? So I never said I was drinking and using, but I certainly did complain about a lot of all of this that was happening, all the issues in life, and the true issues that needed to heal, sure, but that's one piece that I always kept in terms of, I'm not going to share that. That's, you know, that's too much information, and you know, scary, I'm going to get fired. Well, I ended up getting fired anyhow. So in 2006, I got fired from this really good job I had. And but I had been out on depression leave and due to anxiety. And so turns out that I was still drinking and using heavily, but I was not showing up to work. So first time they gave me an opportunity, 30 days out, came back to work, approved to come back. And then I just got nervous. You know, I got nervous. It was too much pressure. And I remember a Tuesday, went back to work after getting everything, you know, approved to come back to work. And the best thought I had that morning was to go to a bar that opened at 7 a.m. And I was out for another 40 days. And so then I get a letter. I get a call from my boss, then I get a letter from my boss. So, you bet. Let go. Been let go. How dare you? But anyhow, so that is at the height of my disease, is I have been drinking, using to cope with life, and moving forward, did get a couple of other jobs, and I remember that the same patterns that drinking and using, after I picked up a drink, things got out of control, and I would not come back to work. I would call in, and or other things would happen. So either I was embarrassed, too embarrassed to come back to work. I remember I had a really good job in Dallas. I was supposed to be at a conference. I was out and about drinking. Actually, my sister came in to visit, and we went to a Mexican restaurant, and I had me a margarita or two for lunch with my sister, and I had my laptop and everything ready. I didn't go to work the next day. I continued partying on when my sister came back home. So, again, I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I just knew that when I picked up a drink or other substance, things got out of control. Another example was a job, and because thank God, because of the career that I've been in and the experiences that God has put in my path, I've been employable. So, the type of niche that I'm in, they seek for this type of experience. So I get another job in Austin, and they set me up with an apartment in Austin and everything to transition. They're paying for relocation and all. In 2007, get this job, and I'm staying at a hotel. And on Tuesday night, they had free beer. And guess what I did? So, it's one of those things that come to find that after I pick up that drink, I just go out of control, and I just don't make it to places I'm supposed to be in. And so my life is out of control, step one, and then I'm powerless over alcohol, no kidding, and that our lives have become unmanageable. Mine certainly wasn't manageable. Had another job, and thank God, and I lasted there for about 5 years. But I continued drinking and using, and mind you, during all of this time, I'm still seeking a psychiatrist and psychologist and seeking other, healing and help. But really didn't have the drink issue addressed. And in 2009, I got a DWI. And that was a little God signal. It's like, okay, all right, you may have a problem. And what happened was, out of nowhere, I just thought I'd go drinking. And the next day, I just didn't make it to work, so I was rested. So luckily, I'd say to me, thank God, God doing for me what I cannot do for myself always is taking care of me and loving me. Come to find that DWI, after going through court, somehow evidence was lost. Cop didn't show up to any hearings. Case dismissed. No DWI on my record at all. Big Daddy. I call him Big Daddy, by the way. And so that drinking scared me a little bit. And I thought, I'm not going to go to bars and get busted driving and drinking. So somebody introduced me to other substance, meth. And I thought, well, I'd rather do that than so I chose meth. And for purposes of my own experience, I share other substances, but bottom line, I am an alcoholic. So I went on binges, and I went on using while I was taking other prescription medication and still seeing doctors about other things, and things spiraled out of control. As rapidly as alcohol and cocaine, for example, had gotten out of control, so did meth. I'm afraid of needles. I never would have imagined that at the height of my disease, that I would have been allowing others to put needles in me, or myself injecting and self-injecting, other substances. And so, we'll fast forward to 2012. I have been missing my job for a while. I still kept the job. And I remember that, I got sick all of a sudden. I had pneumonia. And it was this fever that just wouldn't go down. I mean, it was 106, And I remember my grandmother crying and just, you know, was like, give it to me, God, and I don't want him to be this sick. And I just couldn't shake this fever for some reason. And so, again, surrounded by the love of God, the love through my family, and also we end up in the hospital. Go to ER, actually go to emergency clinic, then go to ER, and then we took care of the pneumonia. But then I go see my internal medicine doctor, and he said, you got to get an HIV test done. And no matter what, because the pneumonia, and, you know, even though I was gay, and, but it didn't matter. If you have pneumonia, you go get an HIV test done. And so I got an HIV test done, and it came back positive. And so in 2012, I'd say that to me is at the height of my disease and with unresolved issues, I went on I was the worst in terms of being out of control. I wanted out. I remember as a kid always thinking, I will not ever commit suicide, because my grandpa, you see, was very sick of alcoholism, and I'll say he was a heavy drinker for purposes of sharing this, but he took his own life at 46 years old. I'm 2 years older, 3 years older than he is. And, you know, I remember hearing as a kid in my family, about him taking his life and all the disease and all this, and so I never thought I would commit suicide, but I was actually slowly killing myself. I wanted out. I was self-destructing. And when I got the diagnosis, I just let go, completely let go. And I remember that after many binges in 2012, one time sitting in the car with my sister and her crying, just looking at me, just saying, you know, I just don't know. I'm preparing for the worst. I'm preparing for the worst because, you know, I see what's happening. So in other words, she's really preparing for me to die. And so I had lost hope. And I was coming into work high and going out working and just disappearing on my family. 2012 is when I actually started binging, where I would disappear for more than 4 days, 5 days. And I had never done that before. And it is a true blessing for me to be standing here today on the weekend after Thanksgiving and truly being a miracle of this program and passing it on. Because you see, 4 years ago, actually 5 years ago, on Thanksgiving weekend, was prior to my last binge, and that we were supposed to get together for Thanksgiving. And what happened was I went on dinner with my family and went to La Cantera, went to a Chinese restaurant, had some sakis and other drinks, a couple of drinks, didn't take much. But that started that phenomenon that I now understand, the craving, the allergy that I have. And no matter what happened, so see, a month prior and many other, like, few binges, I call it about 10 binges that in 2012, that repeated pattern didn't stop me. I went for that first drink and I fell again. And I remember having that drink, not knowing I'm an alcoholic, and I disappeared from the family. I had family from Costa Rica here. I had my cousins, I had my nieces, and they were visiting. I hadn't seen them in 10 years. And I opted, instead of coming home and staying with the family, I went on dropping off my cousin's husband and immediately getting a motel room and calling my dealer. And I was gone for a good 5 days. We were supposed to be on a flight to Vegas that Thanksgiving. I missed the flight. I missed out on the family. I missed out on Thanksgiving altogether. I had never missed a Thanksgiving. I may have been maybe drunk, or I may have been hungover from a previous night partying or what have you, but I never, ever missed a Thanksgiving with my family. And so that is so it is a true blessing for me to say that it is a privilege and an honor to be here sharing this, because a month later after that, in 2012 in December, on a Sunday, after having recovered from the Thanksgiving escape, I thought it was a good idea to go have a drink on a Sunday. And I was supposed to pick up my sister at the airport. She was coming back from LA from a business trip. I didn't show up. I stayed at the bar, and I was gone for another 5 days. I was drinking, using, and my life had spiraled out of control. And if I would have continued at that rate, I wouldn't be here to share this, because I was not only fighting this disease, or didn't know, I finally got a program to have the medicine to fight this disease, but as well as I was fighting another killer disease. If I didn't take my medicine, I wouldn't be alive, because thank God, and thanks to the miracles of this program, of science, the HIV had all very suddenly been in control. So I was doing very well from a results perspective, even though I was using, even though I was self-destructing in other ways, my health was getting better. But I was, not addressing, or didn't know I needed to know how to address the other issue. So fast forward, December 13th, just, threw the towel. I fell asleep at this other motel I was at, wake up in a nightmare. My family's crying for me. They were really crying for me, looking for me. I had been gone for 5 days. I was supposed to take my grandma to doctor's appointments and all that. Nah, I wasn't around. So I rushed home, and this is truly God doing for me, and the miracle of that love, and I see His hand. And my sister had already lined up rehab for me. She had done all the research. I had a toll-free number to call when I got home. I called it because I was just tired. I was sick and tired of being tired and repeating the same patterns over and over again. So I surrendered to, I don't know what, but I remember in my mind thinking of throwing the towel. I drove like a bat out of hell to the house. I make it to the house, and I see my grandmother, my back then 93-year-old grandmother, shaking in front of the house, nervous, waiting for me. Thank God, I was able to make it back home, and again, welcomed, but nothing but love. And I went ahead and took on the advice of calling that rehab place. So on the next day, instead of doing what this friend had recommended, that I would do on my ultimate high on the 14th of December of 2012, which would have probably killed me, I end up in rehab. And let me tell you about rehab. What an amazing thing that was. I was completely lost. I get there, and I'm just given nothing but love and guidance, and psychologists, psychiatrists, and food was awesome. I mean, to me, is Big Daddy to be doing for me. And then come to find that the director, the medical director of this facility, was an HIV specialist. And what an awesome thing it was for her to say, "You're going to be okay. You are going to be okay. I'm a specialist in this field of HIV. And here, let me tell you about the medicine we have today. And if you keep on this, taking this medicine, and if you keep taking care of yourself, you're going to live a normal life." I needed that. And then the nutritionist happened to be an HIV specialist nutritionist as well, who happened to be at the facility. So to me, takes me to part two. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I remember reading the big book in early recovery, and you know, connecting immediately when I was in rehab to a source greater than me. It was not the higher power or the God of others' understanding, but I remember connecting with something that it was of my own understanding. And it clicked, the light went on immediately. And I just felt this, I couldn't even read when I went to rehab. I had a really hard time reading or concentrating because of the anxiety medication and everything I had taken previously. And I remember just reading and writing steps 1, 2, and 3. And they suggested get a sponsor. I had a sponsor when I was in rehab. And him walking me through Bill's story and associating my life to Bill's story, it's like, oh yeah, been there, done that. And I love that part where it says, to connect to the God of your own understanding. Because to me, then I started seeing things differently after that. And to me, as I see it today as connecting with God. Connecting with a God of, to me, that is nothing but true love and has always been there to care for me in the darkest moments, no matter what. And, you know, continue on the journey. So this steps 1, 2, and 3 in rehab, came out of rehab and dove right into program. I went to outpatient IOP. I took all the suggestions. I had been fired from a job, didn't have a job. I was afraid I was never going to get insured because of HIV and all this. And then immediately all the miracles continue to unfold as I walk on the path with God in recovery. So I take my daily medicine to maintain my HIV in control. And there's a miracle, true miracle of God that today I'm non-detectable and extremely healthy, a little bit too healthy actually nowadays. But, you know, and I have a job, have insurance. I got a job in July of that year with an awesome organization. I've been there for since then, and there's another opportunity around the corner that is amazing. So to me has been being very involved in this, always connected to my source, my true source. And being of service in this program, working with my sponsors in terms of the process of recovery. Did the 12 steps with my AA sponsor early on, and I remember I left a few things out, so I better let those things out because they get me eventually. So I did the steps again with my sponsor and did a full two-hour fifth with my sponsor. I had him wore out, but anyhow, my sponsor is in these rooms, so I'm very grateful for my sponsors and all my awesome teachers. And it, you know, it, so I continue to read, I continue to grow, I continue to learn, and it's just, I love that this new life that has been given me, and what an amazing thing is a complete program of recovery where I take my daily medicine, which is all the suggestions, spiritual toolkit to live by, and live a life of nothing but true miracles. And, you know, I've had some opportunities and some bumps along the road that to me I call them growth opportunities. And so one of them has to do with my codependency. So for example, with that, I've also, you know, started to work with the Al-Anon program to, you know, heal through the process as well. But, you know, it has been nothing but a true miracle. Again, but I'm standing here and having the honor and privilege to pass on what an amazing gift this is. What an amazing gift of life, a new way of living, a complete psychic change in all perspective. Now I have an awesome partner. I was not a good relationship kind of guy before. I was not in good relationships and did not want a relationship for many, many, many years. And through the process of recovery, it's been almost 2 years, but I've been with my loving partner, and what a beautiful family we have, our two families together. So more miracles to come, and you know, again, I'm just very, very grateful for the service opportunities, the recovery, and the unity that we have in our complete program of recovery. So with that, I'd like to close as follows. All right, so I'm going to refer to page 164 of our big book.
said, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. That God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge to the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.